four for two and a steal.
Now it's time to talk Celtics.
Celtics come roaring out of the gate.
This is the Sports Hub Celtics Show with Gasper and Murray. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
The game on lock for sure.
Joel Embiid will jump it up against Aaron Baines. Celtics going for the closeout. Game five. Jaylen Brown misses both free throws. Covington is going to try. Deep three. Got it. Robert Covington gives Philadelphia the lead.
That was one big misses on that free throw line.
Horford turns on Sarge. One dribble. Double team comes. Shoots over it and banks it in. Ben Simmons down the middle of the floor. Finger roll. Bounces in. Sixers have their largest lead now, up by four. Tatum attacks the paint, lobs it for Al Horford, who throws it down with two hands. And this time, the Celtics not only score, they score quick. Tatum, right-hand dribble, gets away from Simmons, attacks the paint and misses the layup, but Marcus Smart is there to make the play on the inside. Offensive rebound put back, and with exactly 1 minute to go in Game 5, we are tied at 109.
Lean up, Al, to catch a bottle exploded.
Sarge turns the face on Smart. Bumps him twice, knocks him over. Ball is free and Horford pounces on it. Tatum catches, keeps it away from McConnell and scores off the window. Ooh. And Brett Brown does not want to use his last timeout until the ball comes across half court, and he will use it now. Embiid bumps him, gets in deep, pulls it up, no good, scramble for the rebound. Embiid has got it, knocked away by Rozier. Out of bounds off Embiid, Celtics ball.
Wow.
And Embiid crashes to the floor, his hands over his head.
Derrick Rozier came on the backside and knocked that basketball away.
Redick fires the deep three. Got it! And Brad Stevens will call his final timeout. Long touchdown pass. Picked off by Marcus Smart. He fires the ball into the air. It crashes to the ground as the Philadelphia 76ers season comes to an end.
Man. The things that Marcus Smart is able to do, crazy.
Your seasons are on the line, and when you're in the playoffs, and when you've got to do really hard things, he can do really hard things.
Game 5 recap put together by Jimmy Stewart, producer Felger and Mans. Welcome to the Sports Hub Celtics Show, 98.5 Sports Hub. Big Jim Murray, Chris Gasper, and you at 617-779-0985. So before we go forward and preview the Eastern Conference Finals for the second straight year against the Cleveland Cavaliers, let's look back and look at this series, because I found this series fascinating, Chris, because I couldn't have been more wrong about it. Shame on me. I bought into the hype of the Philadelphia 76ers, how well they played down the stretch. They had the best player in the series, at least on paper, in Joel Embiid. Ben Simmons had been almost averaging a triple-double there for a stretch. Played phenomenally against the Miami Heat in their first-round series. I bought into the hype. I thought the Sixers were going to win that series in six games, and the Celtics knock them off in five. They win this game 114-112, and there were a couple of these games were like wildly exciting and like a roller coaster ride right up until the end. But I don't know. Like, I came away with it, and Felger talked about this during the week too. I came away like underwhelmed by the 76ers and how poorly coached they are. Like, maybe it is more hype than substance with that team. And I don't know, like, I don't feel as fearful, I guess. Maybe that's not the right word. But I feel like, okay, there's going to be a rivalry there going forward. But unless they make some kind of crazy move this offseason and the Sixers add, maybe it's LeBron, maybe it's Kawhi Leonard, like, as presently constituted, I don't know, I ain't all that scared of that team. Like, I overestimated them.
They still have some growing to do. There's no question about that. Ben Simmons is a fantastic player, but he's not a finished product. I think Embiid learned a lot in that series. And the Celtics and Brad Stevens did a great job of exploiting what, to me, is the biggest hole on that roster, and that's they lack athleticism on the wing. You know, Covington had a terrible series. He really did. I mean, he was good in Game 2, but other than that, he was brutal.
Well, so many of those guys are such defensive liabilities. And you saw like guys like J.J. Redick, guys like, well, Dario Saric had a good game. But Redick, Bellinelli, Covington at times, yeah. Like they are.
I mean, Covington's supposed to be their best defender.
Yeah.
Honestly, Simmons should be the guy that they can put on anybody, but he just doesn't care on defense. I mean, yeah. He really doesn't. The first time that guy puts his hands up when he's down in a defensive stance will literally be the first time.
So I wonder if it's maybe they need better coaching, maybe they need an attitude adjustment, but, you know, this is.
They could use like a junkyard dog. They need like a Marcus Smart type of guy. And that's what they sort of have to come out of this draft with, whether it's like Miles Bridges from Michigan State or a guy like, you know, Mikal Bridges from Villanova. They need somebody like that who has a little junkyard dog in him.
And more than anything else, in terms of the Celtics, my takeaway from the series is I just feel so vindicated about Jason Tatum. Like, I just think that the upside of him is so astronomical. It's why I do not want to trade him for any hypothetical deal for an Anthony Davis or anything like that.
You wavered
like,
for a little bit, though.
teeny.
Yeah.
But him and Jaylen Brown were phenomenal in this series. And you see the future with these two players.
No, absolutely you do. And I said at the beginning of the playoffs that I was going to measure the Celtics in the playoffs, not how many rounds they went, but based on the growth of the young guys. In other words, I would have been, you know, okay with them losing in seven if it's on Tatum and Brown and those guys play really well.
Well,
as
you
opposed
even said
to
that
like,
in the first round with Milwaukee.
I did.
And I was with you on that.
Yeah.
If you saw those guys really shining, like, okay, all right, we see what we have there, then I can live with that.
Like to me, that was more important than winning two rounds with, like, Marcus Morris scoring 20 a game.
Right.
And I'm not picking on Marcus Morris. I'm just saying, like, he's an established NBA player. We know what he can do. For me, what's most encouraging is not that the Celtics are in the Eastern Conference Finals. It's how they got there. It's Tatum scoring 20 points in seven straight games. It's Jaylen Brown fighting through a hamstring injury. Hear that, David Price? A hamstring injury. And going out there and playing the way he played in that Philly series. And he was great in game five, shooting the basketball. It's Terry Rozier looking like a starting NBA point guard. It's all of that. So that's the future for this team, and for them to get there doing it this way. And look, Horford's been great. To me, Horford's been the most consistent player. But them getting there this way, to me, is more meaningful than if it were like Horford and Marcus Morris and Marcus Smart who would carry them here.
Just overall, were you surprised it got wrapped up in five games?
Yeah, I was a little surprised. And I'll be honest with you, I don't think it was fully indicative of the series and the gap between the teams, at least as currently constituted in terms of what the Celtics had available from a roster standpoint. I didn't feel like that was a five-game series. I thought Philadelphia, frankly, threw some games away. I thought they threw away three with incredibly poor execution down the stretch. We know what happened in game two. And then I thought, you know, game five, again, they're up late and they can't sort of close it out. So I think it's a little closer than it would indicate with the Celtics winning in five games. But the Celtics were clearly the better team throughout the course of the series, and they deserve to win the series. So maybe it should have been six games instead of five, or, you know, maybe even seven. But the Celtics were the better team, and that was established throughout the series.
And they're off to the Eastern Conference Finals, which begins tomorrow, tip-off 3:30. You can catch it right here with Sean Grandy, Cedric Maxwell on 98.5 The Sports Hub. There's the thing that's interesting to me right off the bat is how this thing is spread out. So we're going to play some sound from Nick Wright of FS1. He was talking about this yesterday, and I agree completely. Like, this benefits the Cavs. I can't believe the split between Game 2 to Game 3, Game 2 on Tuesday night, Game 3 a week from today. I think that's ridiculous. So we're going to play that sound, and we'll get into Cavs-Celtics Eastern Conference Finals coming up here. Who's the most important player also for the Celtics in this series? And your thoughts at 617-779-0985. It is the Sports Hub Celtics Show. It's 98.5 The Sports Hub.
This is the Sports Hub Celtics Show.
This is Gordon Hayward on the home of the Boston Celtics, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Terry Rozier, he's going to pull up and shoot a three. Got it!
This is the Sports Hub Celtics Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
The Eastern Conference Finals schedule came out, and it's a bummer for Boston because a whole lot of rest early in this series. They play Sunday, so that'll be a week since the Cavs played last. Then they play Tuesday, only one day off. And in between games two and three is three full days of rest. They play Tuesday and then not again till Saturday.
They're giving them one travel day.
Right. No, they're giving them they're 3 days off. Not 2 days off. They're giving them, they are off Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday because they want the series to be extended. So instead of 2 days off, they have three full days off in between games two and three, right? Like,
why is that?
It's great for LeBron. It's great. You can play LeBron 45 minutes.
Schedule. They want to start the finals at a certain date.
Exactly right. They want to start the NBA finals on a certain date, and they want to have as many, there are certain days of the week that are better
but
for
LeBron. But you meant it's bad for Boston.
It's bad for Boston because
LeBron.
LeBron's going to be playing three games in 12 days. Like, he's
got. That never happens.
Say it again?
That never happens in regular season, ever.
Right, and he played all 82 this year. And then they played back-to-back days or every other day in the second round. And they went seven games in the first round. LeBron's going to be fresh for the first time since the All-Star break. Like, this is what this means for him in particular. Celtics are all young, like, except for Horford. They can play. They want to play as much as possible. Like, they're feeling great about how they are right now. Yeah, the time off will be good for them. But that is such an advantage for the oldest team in the league, the Cleveland Cavaliers, and for LeBron James, who's carried the heaviest workload of any player in the league this year.
I think it's a great take from Nick Wright of Fox Sports 1, Sports Hub Celtics Show 98.5, the Sports Hub. Three games for LeBron in a matter of 12 days, and the old-ass Cavs with guys like Kyle Korver. This benefits them. I really didn't pay attention to this until we were talking about it yesterday in Felger and Mez, this schedule of the Eastern Conference Finals. Game 2, Tuesday. Game 3, next Saturday. I don't ever remember that, Chris. Like, the 3 days in between, fine. Four. So my theory behind it, too, is if you look, if these both, the Western Conference Finals and Eastern Conference Finals, if they're to go seven games, that game seven would fall on the following Sunday and Monday, which are usually the best days for ratings for television. So that would make sense. If these series extend, they want them on Sunday and Monday. That's my theory as to why they have it scheduled the way it is. But it is ridiculous.
Yeah, it ruins the whole flow of the series. It's almost going to be like a reset.
It does benefit the Cavs in terms of the rest that they're going to be able to get here. Like, I don't know, like this young Celtics team, like I feel like, you know, it's better for them if these games are going. Like, you only got a couple of days in between. I know it's not going to be like that, but 4 days between two and three, that's insane.
No, you're right. I mean, again, I think on paper, you're right, and I agree with Nick Wright as well in terms of LeBron, because LeBron's the guy that has the most wear and tear on him. He's the guy that's going to have the most taxing job here in this series. But on the other hand, it could pay off for the Celtics in a way. Let's say the Celtics go down 0-2. Now Brad has 3 days to refocus his team and figure it out before they roll into Cleveland.
I guess.
I mean, it's going to reset the series one way or the other.
Yeah.
I that's the way I feel. Like, you know, whoever's going in there with momentum probably is not going to have momentum by the time you actually get to game three. So yeah. I think so. It definitely benefits from a rest standpoint. It's a pro for Cleveland. But it could end up benefiting the Celtics in the end.
Who's the most important Celtic player in the series going into it?
That's a great question. You know, I said yesterday on Felger and Maz, I think it's Jaylen Brown. Because I think I expect Tatum to score. Now, I know Maz said who's going to guard him, LeBron. But I think Tatum will find a way to get some points. Horford will do his thing. So for me, I think the difference maker there is Jaylen Brown. What does he give you on the offensive end, and then what does he give you on the defensive end? If he can play the way he's played most of the playoffs or the way he was playing in the Milwaukee series, I think that gives the Celtics a real chance.
Any concerns about Horford and his unfortunate history against LeBron James?
I mean,
it's 1-15 all time with that one win coming last year.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, there's a lot of guys that have sort of unfortunate. I mean, what's the unfortunate history for DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry?
Yeah.
I mean, that's why he's LeBron James, right? I'm more concerned about his sort of unfortunate history with Kevin Love. You know, last year I thought was a struggle for Al in that series. He played well on the offensive end, but on the other end, Cleveland pounded the Celtics on the boards. Tristan Thompson had a good game, a good series, I should say. He averaged double figures in the series. Kevin Love was great in the series last year. So if those two guys get it going and Cleveland is dominating on the boards and getting a lot of second chance opportunities, that could be a problem for the Celtics. The other thing, going back and looking at last year, Jim, was how well Cleveland shot the three-point shot. I mean, they were really good at that last year. You know, shooting the three against the Celtics, I think they shot better than 40%. And they haven't shot the three nearly that well this postseason. And Celtics opponents haven't shot the three very well this postseason. So I think that's another big factor in this one. And that's why I think Kevin Love is huge. If Kevin Love is knocking down outside shots and rebounding and giving LeBron somebody else who can score that he can rely upon every game of the series, that changes the whole thing.
I'm with you on that. Look, I'm no Kevin Love fan, but when he's on, he's on. And if they get the Kevin Love that they just had in this series against Toronto in the sweep, then there's going to be problems for the Celtics. Like, I don't worry about, you know, Maz thinks that it's going to be LeBron on Jason Tatum. I still think Tatum's going to get his. We'll be getting in the mid-20s every game. Unlikely, but he's going to get his. Same for Jaylen Brown, rather. But the guy that, to me, that I think is kind of sneaky important is Terry Rozier. So he was so hot and cold in these five games with Philadelphia that, okay, are we going to get scary Terry of the first couple of games in this series? Then, okay, the Celtics have a legitimate shot of winning this next series. Is it going to be Terry Rozier of the last couple of games? And I thought he and Marcus Morris nearly killed them in game five offensively. And
Marcus Morris did miss his first nine definitely. Shots,
but Rozier,
completely undeterred, they still kept going.
The thing that bothered me about it is Rozier had been so good at home, and there was almost a tightness to his game. And even he had that rare turnover they had in the fourth quarter that went off of his knee. He looked a little tight. Yeah, he made the big play at the end against Joel Embiid.
Yeah, he did.
offensively, if this team can get Rozier the first couple of games, then I do legitimately give him a shot of taking down the Cavs.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not as worried about that because even the other night, he still got to the free throw line. And yes, he shot 4 of 15, but he made three threes. And if he's knocking down the three-point shot, and he seems to make them in big moments, if he's doing that, it helps your team, and it also forces the other team to defend him. Like, that's one of the things with Baines, right? So Baines will throw up two air balls, but he'll also knock down a corner three. And what ends up happening is the other team's like, this guy's not really a good shooter, but we better get out there, and that opens something else up in that offense. And it's the same thing with Rozier. Now, he's a much better shooter, but even on a night like that where he doesn't have it going, if he's knocking down those threes, they still have to come out and challenge and contest because they know that he can knock that down, and that's what he gives you.
Brandon in Maine on Terry Rozier. You're first up here on the Sports Hub Celtics show. Hey, Brandon.
Hey, yeah, listen, I just got done picking up Mike's gray matter from my living room floor when I made his head explode yesterday, but Murray, before you put words in my mouth, and Maz did this too, and he hates it when callers do it to him, I want Gasper to hear this take because it's really soft. It really is. I was trying to decide what the nerds were talking about when they had the audacity to give the ridiculous inclination that Terry Rozier was the better defensive player than Marcus Smart. And what I gathered from that was actually something tangible that you see on the court. Marcus Smart's offensive ability is so bad, and is the 0 for 8s and the 2 for 13s and the air balls and the front rimming, it leads to transition D at the very worst on mid rushes. So the individual talent of Marcus Smart defensively is astounding, but he keeps putting the team defense in a liability position where Terry Rozier, the team's able to get back in a half-court set. And that is something I think the nerds are trying to expose, and that is not something that's, you know, readily available in normal stats. That's all I wanted to talk about. It kind of puts a shine off of Marcus Smart a little bit, don't you think?
Chris, what do you make of that?
So I think what he's saying is basically the idea that Smart, it was some of his outside shots and some of the ill-advised things that he does, it ends up leading to transition the other way. And that's what's happening. But I'm not into all of those advanced stats. I know some of them. I don't know how that would be measured defensively. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know if that would count against I feel like that would count more against his offensive efficiency. Yeah. I hear what he's saying. I don't understand the idea that I don't care what. I mean, to me, this is sort of like the number. We talk about this in baseball, right? With WAR. A couple of years ago, there was something with WAR that, like, Ben Zobrist had the same WAR as Albert Pujols. I'm like, that doesn't tell me how good Ben Zobrist is. That tells me your number is broken.
Just
and it's the same thing. It's the same thing here. It's like, if you're telling me Terry Rozier is a better defender than Marcus Smart, then this number is broken. It doesn't measure what you think it measures, or it doesn't measure what you think it measures as accurately as you think it measures it.
Johnny in the car on Terry Rozier. Go ahead, Johnny.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I really appreciate it. I love your show.
Thanks.
So when I look at the Smart v. Rozier controversy that's been going on this week in the sense of who would you take, who would you rather re-sign, I'm going to take Marcus Smart, and I feel like an old guy, you know, shaking my fist at the cloud considering I'm a young guy, but I got to say, it's the intangibles. It's the eye test. It's no longer a coincidence. It's a trend. This guy makes winning plays on the defensive end, and 95% of the time, he can absolutely infuriate you from an offensive standpoint. But when you need a play at the end, when Saric is backing him down, when he follows that Tatum missed layup, and by the way, if he missed that layup, we went on to lose that game, Jason Tatum would be getting ripped in this city. But Marcus Smart made the play, picked up the slack. And when it comes to Rozier on the offensive side of the ball, he can make down open shots, and I know he doesn't turn the ball over. He doesn't get them into any offense. When you watch Terry Rozier play, at the end of these shot clocks, he's getting a shot off with 2-3 seconds. So go let Orlando pay him $20 million a year, and he can average 20 points there. I'm taking Marcus Smart. Thanks for taking my call, guys.
Thanks, Johnny. Couldn't agree more. I hope they sell high on him this offseason. I really do. And I know there's concerns about Kyrie's knee, and you want to have a good offensive backup coming off the bench. He'd be a great sixth man. Trade him. Trade him now. Like, if you can somehow look, if you can somehow convince Greg Popovich to sell low on Kawhi Leonard, and it's Rozier and the Sacramento pick, and maybe someone else, or maybe Horford, like, do that. As much as Horford's had a great season, he's got a good postseason so far. But if you can make that happen, make that happen. I just it feels like, in a lot of ways, Terry Rozier is a product of Brad Stevens. Evan Turner and Kelly Olynyk and these other guys.
And
that,
a little bit of Isaiah.
Yeah. Like they...
Jay Crowder.
Yeah. Like, it just feels like he's another one of these guys, and he might be a bit overrated.
Yeah, I sort of feel the same way. I think Terry can play. I think he can start for teams in the league. He's really good, and we've seen that. But I think people have gotten carried away here with what's happening, and I think that they've sort of forgotten what Brad has done with other guys. I mean, Terry Rozier is much better than this player, so I know I'm going to say this, and it's going to come back to bite me with some caller. But do you remember when Jordan Crawford was on this team and Brad got stuff out of him? Terry Rozier is 100 times better than that guy, but my point is Brad will get the most out of anybody, and anybody he puts in a role where they get to be featured and have the ball, that person produces at a better level than they really are as a player. I mean, I think that's a very fair statement, the one I just made. Whenever Brad gives a guy a role where he has the ball a lot, that guy produces at a level that's better than he really is as a player. And we've seen that here with a number of players, and we're seeing it right now with Terry Rozier.
We're going to get Brian Robb's thoughts on the Eastern Conference Finals. B-Rob of Boston Sports Journal. We'll talk to him next and take more of your phone calls on Celtics Cavaliers here in the Sports Hub Celtics Show. But first, let's hear from Sarge. Get the Hub headlines here on 98.5 of Sports Hub.
Want to stay connected to Boston sports?
Who do you root for?
Connect with Boston's home for sports online. 98.5thesportshub.com.
It's an hour dedicated to your Celtics. Chris Gasper, Jim Murray, the Sports Hub Celtics Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
One of the most well-coached team in our league. Obviously, you know what I've said about Brad Stevens before and his ability to get the most out of his guys, how great they are out of timeout, late clock situation as well. No matter who's on the floor and no matter who's played for them, he can put guys in position to succeed and get the most out of who's ever been in their lineup, you know, for the past few years. It's not just this year.
How about that, Celtics fans? Even LeBron James is now a Brad Bond, showing some love to Coach Brad Stevens. Sports Hub Celtics Show, 98.5 The Sports Hub. Jim Murray, Chris Gasper, and you, 617-779-0985. We are going to talk. Go ahead.
I just want to say, you know, that's good analysis from LeBron talking about the opposing coach he has to go against as coach of the Cavaliers. I think it's good that he studies the opposing coach and that he knows he saw what Brad's done to Joe Prunty and to Brett Brown. And he's like, you know what?
I'm not going to let this happen to me.
LeBron James, coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Poor Ty Lue. Guy looks like he's aged about 50 years.
Oh, my God. He looks terrible.
Last couple of series.
And I like Ty Lue. He's a really nice dude. Oh, I feel so bad for him. He does legitimately look like he is aged. I mean, this is beyond the presidential aging.
Yeah.
This is like, I am legitimately concerned for his well-being. And he had the health issue during the year.
So let's talk to Brian Robb, who, of course, covers the Celtics for Boston Sports Journal, bostonsportsjournal.com. If you haven't signed up, do so now. He joins us here on the Sports Hub Celtics Show to preview Celtics, Cavs, Eastern Conference Finals. What up, B-Rob?
What's going on, boys?
So this series, compared to last year, it's obviously the rematch. I gave the Celtics literally no chance last year. Thought the sweep was on the table. Kind of was even sneaky rooting for it because I thought that team was a house of cards. This year, it feels like, am I wrong in thinking the Celtics actually have a more legitimate chance to at least make this a 6 or 7 game series compared to last year?
No, absolutely, Jim. I mean, you're all over that last year with the asterisk Celtics. But this is a different animal on both fronts this year. Not only from the Cavs perspective, like, yes, they swept the Raptors last round. They look like they figured some things out. But at the same time, like, the Raptors kind of gave away a couple of those games, particularly game one. They should have won that. And they were, you know, taken to a 7-game slugfest with the Pacers, who no one thought would even make the postseason this year. So, I mean, if you factor that in, there's no third all-star this year. There's no Kyrie Irving, obviously, on the Cavs end for LeBron to lean on in some of these games. And then you factor in all the new bodies in there, you know, the teams that have made blockbuster moves at the trade deadline, you know, do not have a great track record in the postseason. And so you put all that together with the Celtics clearly having a lot more bodies and a lot more length to throw at the Cavs in general this year. So they're not going to be, you know, they shouldn't have their butt kicked in the glass, shouldn't, you know, have Kelly Olynyk switching onto LeBron James over and over and over at the perimeter. Just all these things, you know, this signals to me that, you know, this series is going to be a dogfight.
Yeah, B-Rob, I mean, it absolutely could be a dogfight because I think Cleveland is more vulnerable than they've been in quite some time. Are you at all concerned about the young guys for the Celtics? I know Jaylen Brown obviously faced LeBron last year, but somebody like Jason Tatum sort of, you know, genuflecting a little to LeBron, being a little sort of intimidated or daunted by the fact that it's the LeBron James?
I'm actually not concerned about that with those two guys in particular. I feel like last year, Chris, like Jaylen Brown in that series, he was one of the guys that didn't look like he was afraid of LeBron on the floor. Like, he was going at the Cavs in head-to-head matchups. You know, he got made, you know, looked silly a few times when LeBron, you know, kind of took it to him at the rim. But he wasn't backing down there. He wasn't, like, you know, hesitant to shoot jump shots. And obviously Jason Tatum, you know, seven straight 20-plus point games in a row now in the postseason. He seems to just be peaking as the postseason is going here. And so I don't think, you know, both of those guys don't seem to be the kind of players that, you know, you worry about from, like, stepping back in the heat of the moment. And while that's a normal problem for rookies in the postseason, you know, the Celtics seem to have a couple of special guys there on that front, I feel like.
B-Rob, have you seen anything different from the Cavs defensively? I mean, going into the playoffs, they were arguably the worst team defensively in the entire field. But, you know, looking at least, I feel like you get to take it with a grain of salt, them sweeping the Raptors because of just their inherent gutlessness. But they hold DeMar DeRozan to 21 points over the last couple of games. Lowry ended up game four with 5 points. I mean, did they find themselves defensively? Are they doing something different defensively that the Celtics got to be concerned about going into this series?
I mean, I think, every year the effort level increases for them, Jim, in the postseason, which helps to a degree for the Cavs. But I don't think they necessarily figured things out against the Raptors on that end of the floor. I really think it was Toronto who kind of just kept shooting themselves in the foot. If you know, just going back and watching some of those games or the last couple games, they missed a lot of makeable shots. And DeRozan and Lowry obviously have the track record the last, you know, whatever, 3-4 years now, just like shrinking from the moment in the postseason. And that, you know, that happened again in this series, and particularly at the end of game one. I think they missed like 10 straight shots down the stretch, like many from just point blank. And so the Cavs are vulnerable here. I think, you know, LeBron, but Kevin Love, the Cavs, I mean, the Pacers did a great job of kind of exposing him in the pick and roll all series long in that 7-game stretch, kind of. And I feel like the Celtics are going to do the same exact thing, you know, if by going small, having him guard Horford and kind of punishing him there. And then Kyle Korver, also very vulnerable. If they're going to play him 30, 35 minutes a game, expect, you know, Marcus Smart, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, whoever they put it there, they're going to be posting him up and trying to, you know, essentially play him off the floor in a similar vein to what they did, the Celtics tried to do with Marco Bellinelli last series, to the point where Brett Brown couldn't even play him in the second half of that game five because the Celtics were going after him too much. So, again, that's where Brad Stevens comes into play. There are more weaknesses in this Cavs defense than any of the two teams the Celtics have already played. And, you know, that's how the Celtics are going to have to win this series, is to just go after those weaknesses time and time again.
Yeah, you're right, B-Rob. I mean, certainly the Cavaliers are weaker than they've been in a long time. It seems like Ty Lue's made some adjustments, though, throughout the course of the playoffs, and one of those was sort of reintroducing Tristan Thompson into the mix. Tristan Thompson played really well last year against the Celtics. He averaged more than 11 points per game, and it was 7 rebounds as well. What do you see his role being in this series?
It's going to be fascinating, Chris, because...
Because he is a good pick-and-roll defender, by the way.
Yes, no question. He's like, that's something that can, you know, if you're the Celtics, I feel like you kind of hope that Ty Lue leaves him in a bench role to start this series. He could, but given how well he's played last year and just over the course of his career against Celtics, it wouldn't shock me if Ty Lue says, okay, we're gonna start big now. We're going to put Thompson at the 5, Love at the 4, and then try to beat the Celtics up on the glass like they have the last couple of years. Now, the Celtics are better suited now with Aaron Baines to throw in there, to kind of muscle with Thompson. But Thompson's still, like, he's still going to, you know, hit the glass hard. And Baines, you know, doesn't necessarily have the strength advantage against him as he would against other guys. So the question is, you know, who's going to win that matchup all series long? Because whether Thompson is starting or coming off the bench, Baines is pretty much going to go toe-to-toe from there. And that could swing the series in terms of if the Cavs can get those extra second-chance opportunities on the glass. And then defensively, obviously, if Thomas can be a rim protector and someone who can, you know, slow down the likes of, you know, Tatum and Rozier and switches on the pick and roll because, again, like you said, Chris, he's kind of held his own on that front over the last couple of years.
You sound pretty confident going into this thing, B-Rob. Maybe I'm just, maybe I'm just projecting that. But let's get a prediction out of you. How's this thing play out?
Yeah, I've been going back and forth, Jim. But I, you know, I'm going to go Celtics in seven here. I
think. Yeah, B-Rob.
It's just a situation where, I mean, I think LeBron is played at an otherworldly level. But I think the Celtics, while they can't really stop him, they have at least, you know, four or five guys they can throw at him over the course of the series to slow him down. And then it's just the supporting cast of the Cavs. I just don't trust them in this series.
Like, I think B-Rob, I think this is the worst team that LeBron's been on since that team in 07 that got swept by the Spurs.
No, the 10 team was worse than that. Not worse than the 07 team, but the 10 team was worse than this team.
Yeah, the Shaq team,
team. Think, yeah, the Antoine both, Jameson, Mo Williams, that group was worse than what he's working with now.
Yeah, it's not pretty when, you know, Kyle Korver is your number two guy. That's great, but that's not really ideal when he's 36 years old. So, again, LeBron's LeBron. It's never really smart to bet against LeBron, but it's at some point, at the same time, it hasn't been smart to bet against the Celtics team all year long, given what they've gone through and just the fact that they're seemingly peaking here at the right moment. But, you know, I feel like to me, a dogfight series, a bit of a coin flip, but I think the home court advantage, the Celtics have played so well at the Garden all year long. I feel like that game five guys were like that. The Sixers kind of were ready to take that game. They played really well in that game.
Yeah.
And yet the Celtics kind of like, you know, they fought back and they made the plays they needed to make at the moment. So, I'm going to stick with Celtics in seven here.
All right. A confident Brian Robb, who covers the Celtics for BostonSportsJournal.com. Follow his coverage there. Likes the Celtics in seven. Of course, follow him on Twitter as well, at Brian T. Robb. B. Robb, enjoy game one tomorrow. Thanks for taking the time with us.
My pleasure, guys.
All right.
Garden.
Sports Up Celtics Show 98.5 is Sports Up. Our long commercial-free segment coming up next. We'll get right to your calls and your thoughts on the upcoming Eastern Conference Finals.
1 hour each week at noon on Saturdays. The Sports Up Celtics Show on 98.5, the Sports Up. Chris Casper, Jim Murray. The Sports Up Celtics Show on 98.5, the Sports Up.
LeBron's playing at a very, very high level right now, and so is Kevin Love. And both of those guys have been our nemesis. And on top of that, you know, we've played them a lot over the last couple of years. But those two guys in particular, Kevin and LeBron, have given us fits. And those are two matchups that are very difficult for us.
Oh, strong words by President of Basketball Ops, Danny Ainge, who was on with Tucker and Rich in his normal spot earlier this week. LeBron James, Kevin Love, the nemesis of the Celtics. Kevin Love? Yeah. Sports Up Celtics Show. Let's hear from you. Your thoughts on this upcoming Eastern Conference Finals, 617-779-0985. Do I have a nemesis? Not to my knowledge. I don't know. Do you, Chris? Is it like Steve Buckley or another columnist? You're like, ah, damn you, Buck.
No, not Buck. I love Buck.
No, I know. He's like the nicest guy on the planet.
I don't know. I don't think. I'm trying to think. No, definitely not. I don't know. I don't. I'll have to. Let me think about that one. I probably do, but not professionally.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure there's. I mean, believe me, I'm sure there's many people out there that hate my guts and just don't know it.
I thought your nemesis was the Atlanta Hawks.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of that Atlanta experience.
Or Atlanta sports in general.
My boss down there, my old boss down there, a bit of a nemesis. Yeah, sure. A true nemesis, though, like, you can really never get over the hump of him. I got to think on it, too. All right, your thoughts on this upcoming series. Who you think the most important player for the Celtics is? Anything, really. 617-779-0985. Ken in Vermont, you're next here on the Sports Hub Celtics Show.
Hey, guys. So, I have a nemesis, and that's every green teamer that's out here that is telling me Terry Rozier is a part of the future of this team. All he's doing is making it so Isaiah's whole tenure here is even more downplayed because any average to below average role player can do what the guy did. And now Rozier is doing it. People are falling in love with him, and the guy is not part of the winning future of this team. I hope Danny takes him and trades him for another better piece, the same way he did with Thomas, the same way he did with Bradley, because good players are still better than players that aren't good. And I'm just waiting for the green teamers to realize this. Hey, thanks a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a little strong to say Terry Rozier is not good. I mean, he is good.
No, he's good.
But he's not this good. And here's the real question. Who cares what I think? Who cares what you think? What does Danny Ainge think about Terry Rozier? Does Danny Ainge think this is real? That this is what this guy is? Or does Danny Ainge think what he thought about all the other guys you know, the Jay Crowders and the Avery Bradleys and even Isaiah, man, Evan Turner, and all those guys that, okay, Brad's done a great job of maximizing those guys in our system, but there are more talented players out there. Like, let me ask you this. If you could move Terry Rozier for Gary Harris or Jamal Murray of the Nuggets, would you do it?
Yes.
I would do it in a heartbeat. Yeah. I wouldn't even think about it. I wouldn't even think about it. I don't even have to think about that. And you know what? I bet you Danny feels the same way.
Yeah, I think for me, it doesn't necessarily look. I mean, best case scenario is you're able to move him this offseason in a trade with San Antonio that they sell low on Kawhi Leonard because they're sick of his crap. Yeah. But if you got a young player like that that's under team control or like a really good draft pick, like I'm into that. Like, yeah. You know,
I mean, just... well, Harris's contract is not great, but it's, you know, if you're going to pay a guy money, it's like you want some. I would rather have him. You know, if there's somebody you're going to have to pony up for, he's already gotten his sort of big restricted free agency payday.
Let's go to
this point.
Peter and JP on this upcoming Eastern Conference Finals between the Celtics and Cavs. Hey, Peter.
Hey, guys. My favorite show on the radio, by the way.
Thank you.
I love it, and you guys do a great job. But one quick point on Marcus Smart and Terry Rozier. There's a lot of Terry Rozier's. There's only one Marcus Smart. So I think Danny's got to sign Marcus Smart.
That's a good point. That's a good way of looking at it. I mean, Terry's really good, but there are, you know, a good scoring point guard like that. You can probably find that guy again in the draft.
And then next year they've got so many scorers, they really need a pass first. I mean, if we had Chris Paul next year, that would be great. But the reason I called mostly is this Celtics team is completely different than last year's Celtics team. Last year's Celtics team had nobody that could even bother LeBron James. I mean, maybe Jay Crowder, but he had a high ankle sprain. Avery Bradley, great defensive player, couldn't do it.
If anything, Jaylen Brown did a pretty decent job
Jaylen did a decent job.
Okay, they had Jaylen.
But you're right.
He's small.
No, your overall point is right.
This year, everyone on their roster can give him a hard time. And last year when he went to the everyone, coming off the bench, you got Marcus Smart, Marcus Morris.
I mean, I'm sure Shemi will get a shot, just like he did against Giannis.
Shemi Ojeleye is the X factor because he shut down the Greek Freak. But
that's a little strong. But he did a nice
job.
Good job.
Yeah.
Well, he 16 points in one game.
But overall, Peter, it sounds like you like the Celtics in this upcoming series, and you give them a legit shot.
A super legit shot. And the one thing, I don't know how many people are talking about. If LeBron James goes to the basket, he's going to get mauled by Aaron Baines. I mean, Aaron Baines is not going to get out of his way. And last year, this center was Amir Johnson. So I just think they can beat up LeBron. And their three-point defense was so good that Brett Brown said he had to change his whole offense because the Celtics' three-point. And then they were the best in the league. So... I mean, they should. I just think the Celtics. You know, I'm not going to predict because, well, you know, LeBron. But I think. Well,
but you're confident. You sound confident, and thank you very much for the call and the compliments, Peter. Yeah, look, I feel a hell of a lot better than last year. Last year, I thought a sweep was on the table. This year, no, I'm going to go Cavs in six because of the way LeBron's playing. But look, I couldn't have been more wrong about this last series against the Sixers. And I think this is going to be a far more competitive series than last year. I do like the thought of Aaron Baines getting all cranked up and he's off. I'm going to go hard in the paint. Yeah? Come on, come in the paint there. Sorry. I like doing voices. But
bring back the count.
Don't know what you're talking about.
That's your nemesis.
I do. Yeah, that's
by the way.
It's you. Guy who my pal I sit here with and occasionally go grab drinks with. As it turns out, Chris Gasper is my nemesis.
I'm not your nemesis. I'm your straight man. I'm your foil.
But if the Cavs were to lose this series,
yeah,
does it dent LeBron's legacy? So we're going to get into that coming up after here because Chris has strong thoughts on this. We were just discussing in the last commercial break. But we're going to get into that and more of your thoughts on the upcoming Celtics-Cavaliers Eastern Conference Finals at 617-779-0985. There's no commercials here, folks. It's just Sarge, Mike Riley, going to get you caught up with the Hub headlines. And then will this dent LeBron's legacy if the Cavs were to lose this series? And we'll get to you as well. It's Gasper Murray, 98.5 of Sports Up.